Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, your life connection to the information for a healthy body, an enlightened mind, and a renewed spirit.
Good afternoon, everyone. You're listening live with Calling All Leaders and Healers with host Barbara White. Today is a special episode of Calling All Leaders and Healers, and we're very excited. Barbara White is a gifted intuitive, holistic therapist, and spiritual teacher. She is the creator of the self-acceptance process and has a master's in transpersonal psychology and eco-psychology, diploma of homeopathy, and is a published author. Called the midwife to the soul, Barbara has ignited hundreds into knowing their inherent worth and facilitated the birth of their innate gifts. Barbara is the owner of the Accepted As I Am Center, certified in advanced auricular medicine, Shambhala Master, Reiki Master, Qigong practitioner, and is a black belt in Isshinryu Karate. Her books, Why Self-Acceptance is So Powerful and Self-Acceptance Process and Magnificent You, are available on Amazon. Barbara's driven and passion to teach comes from knowing that if someone is willing to look within and grow, they can be a healer and leader to others. So without further ado, I give you your host, Barbara White.
Welcome, everybody, and thank you for listening to Calling All Leaders and Healers. This is a special show and broadcast that is going to host the spiritual phenomena called Michael Bernard Beckwith. He will be coming on at 5 o'clock. So join me right now. I need your help, your co-creation, to create a space that when he arrives in a short 20-something minutes, that we are fully receptive to his message of transformation and being a beneficial presence on the planet. So how are you? Thank you for joining today. And calling all leaders and healers, we know that through our self-love and our self-acceptance that we can be a leader and a healer to those around us. This is not some special trait or some special thing that only certain people have, that you who are listening and you who are listening to the archives have the ability to, through your self-love, through your inner growth, to uplift, to harmonizing good in your life. And so thank you for taking this time to look within. Thank you for listening to this show today. And I'm really grateful for having Dr. Michael Beckwith on in a bit. I thought I would begin the show just so to get a flavor of what he's going to be offering from his book, Spiritual Liberation. It is Fulfilling Your Soul's Potential. And he has in this book affirmations, declarations that are powerful activations to remembering who and what you are. The one I'm going to read is an embodiment. It's on page 79. And so I'll go ahead and read it. And just feel the energy, feel the vibration of this man's magnetic words. Right here and right now, I enter in the spirit's full dimension of unconditional love, peace, and clarity. In the light of this clarity, I align my awareness with the universal law. My entire inner being opens and welcomes these qualities as the laws of my life. I fully accept that abundance is a natural byproduct of the law of circulation. How good it is to know that it is a natural part of my being. I think from this place, I act from this place, and I express generosity of the heart. I share my resources in knowing absolutely that the source and substance of my supply is limitless. Oh, how magnificently practical it is to live from this realization. I know that abundance is the law of life, and I radiate the manifestation of all needs met for all beings. I live in the secret place of the Most High, of the First Cause, my source. With my feet firmly planted on earth and my heart directed heavenward, my inner ecology is enlivened, upleveled, and grounded. The universal laws by which I navigate my life are fully revealed to me. I gratefully acknowledge those areas in which I have yet to grow. I welcome them. I embrace them. With full confidence, I recognize that all which I need in order to shift and transform my consciousness is within me. I also see those areas in which spirit works through me, and I humbly give thanks. I now tap the reservoir of the ever-expanding realm of spirit and unify with this presence. From the source comes the whole of existence, that which is good and that which is called bad. In divine mind, no such distinctions exist, and they now cease to exist in my mind. Life exists, life in all of its expressions. How beautiful it is when one has the inner eyes to see with the clarity. How precious is this human incarnation. Whew, huh? And that's just half of the declaration. And just take a moment to breathe that in. Together we move into that space of non-duality, that space that knows all parts of ourselves are loved, are good. This is an incredible leap for the mind to say that all parts of me are lovable, all parts of you are lovable. The mind will do anything not to make this shift. Anything. To say that all parts of you are lovable, to really embrace and love yourself, it is, of course, a process. It's, of course, why I am so passionate about the self-acceptance process. But as we love ourselves, as we really begin to see that nothing within us can be separate from love, can be separate from God, and we do that as we witness these parts of ourselves that just seem so scary or so ugly or so unworthy. And we begin to bring a gentleness, a witnessing to them, or maybe even a curiosity. And from that place, it's not that we just keep on loving ourselves so that we can be narcissistic. It is so incredibly important that people do their inner work by loving themselves and being gentle with themselves, because when we do that, we actually shift into a greater awareness, a greater realization of the love, the God, the beauty that we are. See, emotions are children of the ego. Ego is the belief that you are, I am, separate from God. Now, we can just answer that and be all in our mind about that and say, well, I don't think I'm separate from God. But when we have the signal of fear, a little bit of tension, that's a signal we think we're separate from God. See, love, God is love, beauty, prosperity, well-being, or if God is Christ and magnificence in the cosmos or the universe or source. So if I really truly knew, 100% knew I was one with that, how could I ever have a worrisome thought? Right? But we do. We do. As humans, we do. Because we are meant to have those little wobbly thoughts, those feelings. Because as we witness them with love, that's the next expansion, the next step into really making what Michael Bernard Beckwith calls the presence of God real, with a capital R. Moving from the real with a little r to the real with a capital R. Where we move into that space that God is all there is. God is all there is. So self-love and self-acceptance is not something we just do once. It's not that we just get over something. It's a willingness. It starts with a willingness to love all parts of ourselves. That's the doorway into spiritual growth. If we don't do that, we don't have the foundations of what Michael Bernard Beckwith calls the infrastructures to integrate love, to integrate prosperity, to really feel God in our bones. 85% of lottery winners lose their winnings. But I also see where people can have spiritual experiences, but they're not transformative. In fact, I see where people can come to a retreat or they can go to a great seminar. And I'm going to be quoting Michael a whole bunch, Dr. Beck with a whole bunch, because he's coming on. So I'm going to quote the heck out of him. But we get high, we don't get free, as he puts it. And I like to call those bliss bunnies. Or in transpersonal therapy, we call that spiritual bypassing. But I don't want to bring judgment to that. That's very painful. Because you go and you hear about, think positive, you can be happy. Or just have faith in Christ. Or law of attraction, which those are all incredible ways to direct our mind. I'm not saying they're not. I'm just saying, if we don't have the foundation of self-love and self-acceptance, then that actually can be used. Those words, you are 100% responsible for your happiness. You attract everything that's in your world. You co-create your reality. Just have, believe in faith in Christ and everything will work out. Those words can actually be used as ammo against yourself. And I haven't met a person, a human, that doesn't do that. Says, man, I shouldn't be feeling this way. Come on now, you've thought that thought. I shouldn't be feeling this way. I should feel better. I need to get my my shit together. Or I should. Anytime we use this word, I should, I have to, I ought to, you're stuck in shame. And the thing is that we're meant to challenge ourselves. We're meant to grow. So if you want to grow, then you've got to be able to face the next level of insecurity and fear. Oh, baby, the fear and insecurity I had to face in hosting my teacher and an inspiration spin. I've had this dream of having Michael Bernard Beckwith on my show now for 8 years, 7 years. And to have this dream come true, there's a part of me that's saying, well, yeah, I've done the inner work. I've loved my humanity. I've continued to take those steps. Absolutely brought up the next layer of stuff that needed to be loved. And then what did I see? I saw more faith, more love, more joy. People ask me, they say, you know, how did you publish books at such a young age? And I said, well, I was just willing to die for love. I was willing. I knew that if I didn't do it, then I would be hurting humanity. As many of you know, the biggest shift came for me in my early 20s when my hero and my mentor told me I was going to hell. And I'm so grateful for that. And when I believed it for a year, year and a half, at the end of that, I knew everything was love. Not everything, as Michael Bernard Beckwith says, not everything is love. No, he doesn't frame it that way. I'm losing how he frames it. I'm just going to say it the way I say it. That everything is love, but love is in everything. Omnipotence, omnipresence. And so when I saw people sitting in front of me and they would spontaneously shift, I initially thought it was some like I was anointed or, you know, I was special. And we're all magnificent and amazing, but none of us are special. And then as I was writing Why Self-Acceptance is So Powerful, I was recording my sessions, I realized that power was within all of us. I didn't realize that overnight. I mean, I literally watched 10,000 sessions and go, oh, we are all leaders and healers. We all have power to change our life. And it's looking within. It's not letting conditions and circumstances affect our abundance, our prosperity, that when we love ourselves, we're like the acorn that is encoded with all the qualities of creation. And when we love ourselves, when we begin to say, oh, it's okay that there's self-hate here. Let me be with this 10 minutes a day. Let me journal with this. Let me pray about this. Let me stop ignoring this. Let me stop covering it up with thinking it's about that person changing or this condition changing. Let me stop distracting myself with technology. And when we do that, that little change, that what we think our mind says, that tiny bit of change changes your life. And so as I saw these sessions throughout the years, I realized, oh my God, everyone has this power. And it was very freeing for me because I was like, oh, okay. And I mean, I had some what I call jokingly egorific moments, you know. You know, change my name to the Anointed One or something. I'm being silly, but and then very insecure moments because if we have superiority, we're going to have inferiority. That's the trick of the ego, right? It's in the embodiment, the affirmation that I read from Michael Bernard Beckwith on spiritual liberation. He says in there, "I live in that secret place where both the dark and the light I am thankful for. That which is called good and that which is called bad. That is a reservoir of ever-expanding realm of spirit." And so if we're in that place of good and bad, right, if we're in that resistance, we're in that analyzing, and we're still thinking it's about the details of finding out the answer, and we still think it's about finding that solution by analyzing the problem, if we still don't realize the bigger symbolic reason of what's happening, that everything in our life, your life is a life of God. It's a big teaching that Agape has, a big teaching that Michael Beckwith has, that your life is a life of God. Meaning, what does that mean? That means your everyday, ordinary life is the opportunity to bring forth your brilliance, to fully engage your life. I read a statistic the other day that people only engage at work at 18% of the time. 18% of the time. And so we do that, right? Because we're in pain. We're in pain, and we feel like we aren't good enough, and then we don't know what to do with that. We're told to just think positive or have faith or battle the devil and all this BS that traps us, this duality thinking. And then trapped in that horror, that pain, we kind of half engage our day, half engage our relationship, and then wondering painfully, horribly, why it's not changing. It's horrible. It's the suffering on the planet. And then we dismiss the very miracle that's waiting for us, which is a communion with our own breath, a communion with the being within us that's waiting to be born, a communion with the brilliance that is you, you who are listening. There's such beauty within you. There's a phrase that Beckwith uses, a beauty beyond attractiveness. Because beauty is really a quality of your soul. It's not based on what you look like or how much you weigh. Or have you ever had that experience where you saw someone who was in their 80s and you're like, oh my God, they're so beautiful. Doesn't that go against all the misteaching around beauty in our culture? And so knowing that this self-love, this self-acceptance can powerfully, powerfully shift another person. And that power, that gift is within all of us. I didn't really know before I had fully begin to write. I had it in all different notes, why self-acceptance was so powerful, but I didn't really understand completely what was happening in front of me until I really met Dr. Beckwith. Until I met him, that's when I realized what was happening. I met Dr. Beckwith and Dr. Ricky Byers Beckwith, who is just as amazing. Her music is spectacular. And Dr. Arunatni back in 2008 or 9. And I actually met them by mistake. I mean, there is no mistakes. There is no mistakes. But I met them at the One Piece gathering in Ypsilanti. And I was an hour late. And I was like, it was this gathering that's happening. I'm like, well, and I was still guided to go. And I had actually attended Ypsilanti. I had attended Eastern Michigan for my undergraduate, for my biology degree and my pre-med. At that time, I thought I wanted to go to medical school. I ended up going, of course, into natural health school for a while. I mean, I finished it, but I went in that direction. So I knew where the auditorium was, is my point. And then I get there, and I'm an hour late, and I step up on the sidewalk of the auditorium. And the instant I stepped up, this car pulls up. And Dr. Beckwith and Ricky Byers Beckwith and Dr. Arunatni get out of the car, and they step on the sidewalk. And they thought I was their greeter. So they're like, hello. And they were engaging me, and I was engaging them. And there was just a spiritual light emanating from their presence. And I let them know. I greeted them. I said, hello. And I said, no, I'm not your greeter. Essentially, I was, actually. But I had such an energetic shift from that I knew in that moment what I had never had anyone in physical form, a person, do that for me. So I had spent at that time close to 10,000 session hours of shifting other people through my own self-love, but I'd never had that happen from a person to me. And so I knew in that moment, I broke into tears, because I knew that I had spontaneously shifted and my whole reality had shifted. I knew in that instant that fully that we each have the power, that we each are a tuning fork of God, of love, of beauty, of health, of prosperity for others. And so I knew that what true healing and true leadership looked like, and knew in that moment by meeting them on that sidewalk that day that it was through our embodied example. And I knew there was no other way. I knew if leadership or healing is done in any other way besides embodiment, then it's done in some form of willful control. It's done in some form of manipulation. I love what my previous guest said, and David Schroeder on last month, Calling All Leaders and Healers. He said, a true leader needs no followers. They're just being themselves. And I can truly say, when I've had the honor and the privilege of meeting Dr. Beckwith now since 2008 and 2009, I don't know, about 6 or 7 times, because I've attended his meditation retreats and his conferences when he's been at Renaissance Unity. He does a New Year's meditation retreat that is absolutely amazing, absolutely phenomenal. And he is being himself. He is being himself. It radiates. It's passionate. It's very humorous. It's deeply wise and connected. And so I want to mention, too, that not only the meditation retreat is phenomenal, he's also has a, and we'll talk about it when he comes on, there's a Revelation conference that he's having. Maladoma Somay and Ricky Byers-Beckwith and many other guests are going to be presenting. It's just a wealth, a buffet of wisdom. And then he has a spring meditation retreat coming up as well. That I have soothed you or convinced you that you have the power through your self-love, through your self-acceptance, to be a power, to be a presence in your life. And expressing that joy in your unique way, as Dr. Beckwith says, in your unique patterning, that you have a way of showing up in the world that only you can. That, yes, we are one. Yes, it's God is everywhere in its fullness and not in one place, as Beckwith likes to say. But you have a unique vibration, a unique energy that comes forward. And it's the natural order of creation for you to feel the fullness of your being. That your heart, my heart, beats with the same force that creates stars, that births babies, that flows the great rivers of the earth. That you are innately amazing. Innately, I mean inborn, uncreated, it's encoded in you to be vibrant, healthy, beautiful. And that we are letting go to that. We are opening to that. We are yielding to that. It's not anything we have to make happen. That we are already enlightened. We are already whole. We are already complete. And then we don't have to fix anything. We don't have to figure anything out. It's a letting go. It's an opening up. Oh, isn't that sweet to know that? Yes? That's sweet to know that you just have to be willing to let go. And what do we have to let go of? We got to let go of the fear, doubt, worry, anger, but we got to be with it, right? It's that stuff that gets us stuck. That's the sticky stuff. So I can sit here and talk about yielding to your greatness all day, but if you are fighting with some self-doubt or insecurity or thinking that this person needs to change or this condition needs to change so that you can be aligned with the magnificence of beauty that is you, then my words do nothing. Anybody's words do nothing, right? They just become actually, like I talked about in the beginning, they become ammo to beat yourself up more. Dr. Michael Beckwith likes to say, you do not experience reality, but only your thoughts about reality. Because how we see ourselves is how we see our life, yes? Think about that. How you see yourself is how you see your life. Your eyes, your heart is the lens in which you participate in your life. It's not about them. It's not about conditions. So isn't it pretty wise then, in knowing that, you can only see what you see in yourself. You can't see in another what you haven't seen in yourself. So that's why sometimes you can see the best in someone else and activate that in yourself. That's why we can sit and judge another and we can activate that in ourselves, right? Pretty wise to love yourself, to see yourself as magnificent. To yield to the greatness, as Dr. Michael Beckwith likes to talk about, or he mentions in his CD, Transcendence. To let the greatness happen through you. to yield to your greatness, to let go to your greatness. Because we're all subconsciously hypnotized by what others have told us to be. And that it's natural to be amazing. It's natural to be healthy. It's unnatural. It's unnatural to be stressed out every day. It's natural to let go of the organizing intentions of our life. But opening up means opening to the greater us, the greater being that wants to come forward, means opening to the unknown. Opening to the possibility that there's more you beyond comprehension. And that your mind, my mind, all minds want to hold on to what we know. And so opening to your beauty, your magnificence, opening to joy means opening to possibility, letting go. Because we all will just recreate the present and recreate the past and the present if we grip so tight. And when we begin to see ourselves with love, when we begin to open up, and embrace all parts of ourselves, something amazing can be born. I am so excited and so grateful, and knowing this is going to be an amazing show, and that you have been listening, have set the stage for this mutual upliftment. That in the vibration and the energy of what Dr. Michael Bernard Beckwith brings forward is going to uplift you, uplift me, uplift Detroit, and uplift him. Dr. Michael Bernard Beckwith is the founder and spiritual director of Agape International Spiritual Center. It is a trans-denominational community headquartered in Los Angeles, comprised of thousands of local members and global live streamers. And I highly suggest you go there. When you go there, you get this amazing blessing as well as the incredible igniting upliftment of the community and Dr. Bernard. November marks the Agape's 30th anniversary. And Beckwith's humanitarian works have been read into the 107th Congressional Record. And in 2012, he addressed the UN General Assembly during its annual World Interfaith Harmony Week. As president of the Association for the Global New Thought, he hosts conferences featuring harbingers of, I'll get that word one day, of world peace, including His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Dr. Beckwith is a sought-after meditation teacher, conference speaker, and seminar leader on the life visioning process, which he originated. It's an incredible process, an incredible book. Three of his most recent books, Life Visioning, Spiritual Liberation, and Transcendence Expanded, are recipients of the prestigious Nautilus Award. He has appeared on the Oprah Winfrey Network, Super Soul Sundays, Dr. Oz, The Oprah Show, Larry King Live, Tavis Smiley, owns Help Desk, and his own PBS special, The Answer Is You. Every Friday at 1 o'clock Pacific Time, thousands tune in to his radio show on KPFK. Wake up the sound of transformation. So I am thrilled and excited to welcome Dr. Michael Bernard Beckwith.
And it is my joy to be with you today. Thank you so much.
Oh, you are so welcome. My intention is to provide a platform and a place that people that are listening and that Detroit can really hear the profound energy and message that you have to offer. So thank you so much for taking this time.
Oh, it is my absolute joy. I'll be in Detroit in October, by the way, at the Unity Center down there. And
really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
But I'm so glad to be speaking to you right now, and I was glad to see you and meet you at my annual meditation retreat. And I was so happy to hear about the good works that you're doing and what you're energy is providing for the community, and it's my joy to be with you today.
Thank you so much. So, Dr. Beckwith, I'm curious. You have such a visceral passion that just ignites thousands. I mean, your presence, your energy, the way you speak. I'm sure many people wonder, where does your passion come from?
You know, I'm absolutely in love with life. I'm in love with the present. And so the way I look at it is I get to publicly show my love affair with the presence. The energy comes from a sense of connection with this presence. The presence that, as I say, it's a presence that's never an absence. And so over the so many years that I've had being a public figure, beginning with some initial spiritual awakenings that have continued to unfold, my love of the presence and my connection with the presence has amplified and increased. And I just love my love affair with the presence wide open. And so that's what people are seeing. They're actually seeing and feeling moments of insight and revelation that have occurred to me. And that's where I speak from. I speak from the pool of moments of tremendous openings that have happened for me. And in so doing, two things happen for an audience. One, there's an activation that occurs because there's a lot of energy that comes under the word and under the words that are being spoken. And two, they feel like they already know what I'm saying because I'm speaking to their soul. So by the time it bubbles up into their awareness, they nod their head because they know what I'm saying, because on a soul level they do, even if on a surface level they don't. But it feels like, oh, I know this, I know this, I know this. And that's the experience I want them to have, that they're simply remembering something they already know.
And that recognition that they've already heard it, they already know it, that's that they're really touching that place of truth within themselves. That's
absolutely
a spot within themselves that's also within you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And what a good student has to do is balance pure receptivity, so that when they hear it, even if the mind has heard it before, they don't allow the ego to say, I already know this. It's not the ego saying that, because that will shut them down. So you have to be in beginner's mind where it's like, oh, I know this, but I'm open to a greater iteration, a greater understanding, a greater depth of meaning, a greater participation with it, so that there's a constant expansion of our awareness of the is. So it's a sweet dance that we all learn to take.
So it's hearing it for the first time. I've heard you use those words before, to keep on hearing these spiritual truths as if they were medicine. And just like you wouldn't take your medicine one day and then just say, okay, I'm done with it, or you just wouldn't work out one day and say, okay, I'm done working out, that these spiritual truths that you speak, that you embody, that are hear them over and over again, it's taking your medicine every day, and it's a practice, it's a exercise that people need to do, or be open to, be willing to continue to be a student the rest of our lives.
Absolutely. Those are very important things that you've just said: exercise, practice, and being a perpetual student. And so we always, you know, everything that we do in terms of our meditation, our affirmative prayer, our life visioning process, the generosity, the sacred service, the spirit being involved in a spiritual community, which raises your immunity from the lower frequencies. This is all a practice. It's all a practice and an exercise that ultimately becomes a way of living. So it may start off that you're practicing it. It may start off, you know, that you're exercising. But after a while, it becomes a way of life. And then you're able to maintain an awareness that you are a perpetual student. I'm a lifelong student of myself and a lifelong student of life and the presence. And so I'm eager, I'm enthusiastic, I'm available, because everything that I know is infinitesimally small compared to what I don't know. Because what I don't know is infinite. So why stop with what I know? That's boring. the juice is in the unknown. So.
Like what you talk about in spiritual liberation, that you've only just, in your greatest accomplishment, you've only scratched the surface, that you're just getting started.
You're barely scratching the surface. Barely.
Mm-hmm. How do you? So I know in hearing other interviews with you, I've heard about some of your inner work where you've and correct me if I'm wrong, if this information is not correct, where you did processes with mattresses in the garage, and you did inner work there, and you've done you've done meditation, and you've done these intense practices to really bring love, bring acceptance to your humanity, so your magnificence could come forward. Do you feel like that gets easier after you've been doing this for 30, 40 years, or do you feel like what do you notice the difference after being on the path for so long?
Well, first of all, what you're describing that I did, I did do all of that. I developed a soundproof room in one of my garages, and I would go in every day and do inner work, mirror work, affirmation work, all kinds of work, speaking out loud, shouting, embracing emotionally backed affirmations, where I would embrace any anger within me and turn it into an affirmation and scream it so that it would be transmuted into a higher frequency. I did a lot of inner work years ago. And it cut a groove in my subjective where I became more available to that which is always seeking to express through me and as me. And so what has changed from those moments to this moment is I still have a very strong spiritual practice. I maintain my awareness of the presence. And easier, let me say that, It's such a way of living that it's just a part of me, okay? But I don't slack up because it's a part of me. I don't leave the house until I do meditation. I work off the body temple every single day, some form or fashion. I take care of the body temple in terms of proper nutrition and living foods, and that which you would want to do if you're taking care of a temple. I ask certain questions on a regular basis. I want to always give more than I receive in certain encounters, so that I'm putting the universe in my debt, as Emerson would remind us. So these are ways that I live. And so over 40 years later, easier, it's just a part of me now. So and so whether I'm feeling good or feeling bad, it doesn't matter. It's just this is what I do. It's part of my foundation work that I don't give up. You know, plus I love it. I love becoming still and sitting, and there becomes a pinpoint coherence with this presence, and I just love it. So it's not like it's not like obligation or. You know, I have to really muster up my discipline to go do it, you know. It's I get to sit and meet the presence. I get to sit and meet a deeper part of myself. This is great, you know.
It reminds me what a friend said to me the other day. I think it was a Friday night or Saturday. He said, "I bet you're at home meditating or spiritual studying." And I'm like, "Yes, I have no apologies. That's my hobby, and that's what I love to do. That opportunity to commune with the presence, to be with what we truly are and who we are." And I love that you said it's something that becomes part of you. So it no longer is something you have to think to happen. It's part of grooved into you. And do you ever find with that, and as you described, the simultaneous awareness of being able to be the observer and watch those things arise, and as we become more identified with the presence and love, even with that and that being grooved in, do you still see there's times that you may think, well, I'm this incredible transformational leader that has written all these books, that has helped so many hundreds of lives, and I shouldn't be feeling blah blah blah. Do you ever still get caught in those thoughts?
No, I don't think that. But I'm just aware that if I am not feeling whatever top of the world, I'm just aware of that. It's not like I don't judge it. It's just like I'm just aware that that's there, and I still do the work, so I don't have a judgment on it. I shouldn't be feeling this way. I shouldn't be tired. You know, I shouldn't be grumpy. You know, I shouldn't be impatient, whatever. I don't have a shouldn't be in there anymore. It's just like, oh, that's what it is today. You know, today, you know, I'm moving a little slower than I did yesterday. Today, you know, I'd rather be doing something else other than what I'm doing now. Those are just thoughts in the mind, you know, and I'm aware of them, but I don't, it's not, I don't beat myself up about them. You know, they're just what's going on. And, but the practice still continues, you see. And it's underneath the fog of the mind, whatever the mind is doing in any particular day, you know, the presence is still the presence. You know, life is still life. Love is still love. Joy is still joy. And so, you know, I end up eventually, you know, feeling into that and allowing that to be the activity of my awareness. But at this stage of my development, I don't put myself down if I'm having a bad day. You know what I mean? It's just, it's, and I don't even call it a bad day. It's just a different day. You know what I mean? And then we have to always be aware that, you know, we're not here. You know, I think I described this to a degree in Spiritual Liberation. We're not here to live a challenge-free life. You know, challenges are what our soul creates for our own edification to activate latent possibilities and potential that's within us. Sometimes there needs to be some kind of challenge in order for us to activate something that's not activated. And so when challenges come up, it makes us stronger ultimately. So I'm not wishing for lack of challenge, nor am I beating myself up if in fact the day is going by and I'm not feeling quite up to par. It's just, I just say it is what it is, you know. And if I fight it and resist it, then it's going to become stronger. But if I observe it, it ends up dissipating because it's all energy anyway. And through my observation, that energy speeds up and transmutes itself into a higher frequency.
So, I have a question for you, and it's I have a friend, a community leader, that has an organization called the Superhero Training Academy, and he's helped hundreds of children in the Detroit area. It's really incredible work. It's similar but not the same as Ricky Byers Beckwith's school, where it really helps them to find their gifts and to also embrace their fears and to, they call it move beyond the villains of competitiveness and criticism and comparison. And he's done this work. I've helped him with, we've gone into prisons. He's done a lot of work with the schools. He recently had a, what's called a Molotov cocktail. And he was bombed. And I was very eager to ask you the question, what would to someone that has done all that work and had something like that recently happen, what would you say to them?
Well, first of all, is there a correlation between the work he's doing and the Molotov cocktail, or was it random? What do you know about it?
It was random, meaning somebody, I don't know, it wasn't random, meaning they targeted the community or
what I'm asking. They didn't like the work he was doing.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So in a situation like that, you know, the bad news is the destruction. The bad news is the destructive behavior of the individual that did it or individuals that did it. The bad news is, you know, the mayhem and the harmfulness that it could have caused to people. The good news is that he's doing something. You're not. No one's going to attack you unless you're making a difference. No one attacks a couch potato. You know, and no one attacks somebody who's aimlessly, you know, oh, he's a couch potato, let's blow up his house. No, you know, no one attacks somebody that's aimlessly moving through life, not seeking to evolve or make a difference. So obviously he touched a nerve, and I'm feeling, I don't know anything about it other than that what you're telling me now, but I'm feeling that he was not hurt.
No, he was not hurt. Nope, he got out. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is an opportunity for him to go so deep that the rancor and the resentment and the animosity that would naturally come up as a natural human being, he gets to use this as an opportunity to transcend it and go deeper into his intention for starting the school in the first place, to go deeper into the intention of love and service and kindness and transcending the ego's mind of separation. So it can be a, instead of scaring him away, it can actually jumpstart a tremendous depth of courage that is necessary when you become a game changer. When you become a changer in the world, you know, I can remember in the beginning days of Agape, you know, I remember having death threats, you know. People were calling and they were going to kill me and the person that was running my prayer ministry. And one day somebody answered the phone and said, we're coming up to kill Michael Beckwith. And they asked him why. He said, because he's bringing together all the races and that's not supposed to happen. They're supposed to be separate, so we're going to get him, you know. And there was a moment in the community, particularly on those who were in security, like they took it very seriously. And I did. I took it seriously, too. You know, I didn't stop what I was doing. But it let me know that what I was doing was making a difference, and I had to pray for those people who were demented and sick that would cause harm to somebody that was seeking to make a difference on the planet. And then I can remember another time when I spoke very honestly about President Bush leading us into Iraq and about how he was lying about how you were going to get in and out of there in a few months. I said, you're going to be in there for years. This is a, you know, I spoke against the war, and there was another barrage of hate that came in my direction and threats and all kinds of things, you know. But so I could have played it safe and just, you know, not mentioned anything, but that's not who I was. That's not who I am. And so I went deep. It made me go deeper into really loving those who hated me, loving those people who were working against me. Loving, you know, they weren't working against me. They're working against themselves, you know. I'm just an instrument. And so your friend has an opportunity to definitely do what he needs to do to make sure things are safe for him and his children, the children that he's teaching, make sure that, you know, there's some security. And at the same time, to go deep into that deep sense of forgiveness and love and be guided by the presence within him as to how to do what he's doing. Because, as I said, if he was just a basic couch potato doing nothing, this would not happen, you know. It's only happening because he's making a difference, you know. He's making a difference on the planet. And so we applaud him for that.
I remember a quote that you said many years ago that really helped me that says, if you can't handle the arrows of jealousy and envy, then radiant success and abundance are not for you.
Absolutely.
And
Because basically, see, there's a conspiracy. I'm talking about that a little bit this month. There's a conspiracy for mediocrity. The nation has been dumbed down, and people are a conspiracy for people to walk hand in hand with mediocrity in our country and on the planet itself. And when you begin to rise above being mediocre, you know, the great mystic Walter Russell said that. That mediocrity is self-inflicted and genius is self-bestowed. And so when you begin to rise above that, you're going to be attacked. You're going to be talked about. Envy and jealousy is going to come at you because you're breaking free from the herd thinking, you see. And and so unconsciously, women have an archetypical a vibratory frequency of being afraid of being burned at the stake if they become too powerful. And men have an archetypical instinct against being great because they're afraid they're going to be crucified, you see. So we have this inner thing within all of us. If you're a woman, you're going to be burned at the stake. If you're too powerful, too beautiful, too outspoken, too generous, too whatever. And if you're a man and you rise to greatness, you could be crucified because they that deify you crucify you ultimately. Those are archetypical vibratory frequencies that are held within the memory of humanity. So once you are aware that it's – once you start to do something, the mediocrity is going to attack you. I always say mediocrity attacks excellence. So once you say, I'm about excellence, mediocrity is coming. And it's going to be fault-finding. It's going to look for every mistake you made and amplify it and blow it up. You know, you may do 99 things right. You may make a mistake. Mediocrity is going to take the one thing you did wrong and magnify it until that's who you are, you see. But once you understand that, then, you know, you learn to treat the two imposters the same, praise and criticism. Those are two imposters. The ego is looking for praise and is trying to run from criticism. But once you transcend both, you're not looking for praise and you're not running for criticism, you're looking to be a servant of the Most High, you're free. People can praise you. That's a beautiful thing. It's sweet. I'm not, you know, I love it. It's good. It's not. It's okay. But I'm not working for praise. And then when criticism comes, it's like, okay, people are criticizing. What can I learn from it? It's no big deal. You know, maybe I can learn something from the criticism. You become liberated. You're free now. You're free from it. And now you can hold hands with excellence in a very dynamic way and keep on spiritually stepping.
Yeah. That's. I remember when I first started bringing forth the message of self-love and self-acceptance and how we all can be healers and leaders. I would get a call every month about that I was going to hell, or I would get different messages from different community people, and that was when your quote really helped me. And I said, okay, I'm doing something right. I'm making something happen. And that, and exactly what you said about the fear that you're going to die. I like to. I also see that in people as well, that everyone thinks they're going to have something, their head chopped off, or something's going to happen if they really go and express their gifts. And I remember there was a time where something came in and somebody had made a phone call and there was an email, and it's the point that I said, and of course there's many points like this, but where it's like, okay, fine, if I'm going to die, fine, but I'm not going to stop doing this, that I'm going to die to love, I'm going to die to greatness, if that happens, fine. And then what really, not only does those kind of naysayers continue to say what they're saying, but also I just want to say that you also draw all the good to you, right? Like you draw all these opportunities. Like there may be still those people saying things and thing, but there's incredible friendships and opportunities and good that just shows up from stepping forward in our excellence.
There's something called redemption. You know, when there is an attack, and people are attacking you senselessly, you're the one that gets blessed because you get to go deeper than the perpetrator. If someone comes at you with negative energy, whether it's gossip, whether it's trying to tear you down, whatever the case may be, and you don't engage that, you keep rising above it in your spiritual practices, they're basically pushing you to go deeper. And so you end up going deeper in your own spiritual practice, and then the universe provides more blessings for you. You know, so it's like if you want to make somebody really strong and they're doing good work, attack them. They're going to become even stronger.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like as long as the mind doesn't get caught in trying to understand their misunderstanding or trying to, as I say, bring logic to hate. If you don't try to bring logic to hate and you reach for the presence, you reach for that witnessing mind, yes. But if you're sitting there asking why is there hate or trying to understand their perspective.
That's a futile question. My mother used to say something like, to the effect of, you know, if you try to understand the mind of a crazy person, you'll go crazy. So you don't waste your time asking why a person is doing something that doesn't make sense. You just do your own inner work so that you can transcend it and not be in that vibration or that frequency, you see. Because you're not gonna understand crazy because it's crazy. That's why they call it crazy.
You have another saying that I'd love for you to unpack a bit, and you speak at Agape. You mentioned it in the Spiritual Liberation. I think you mentioned in your amazing CD, The Living from the Overflow, that we don't suffer from attention deficit disorder, but intention deficit disorder. Why is intention so important?
Basically, when you walk out of your house in the morning, you're bombarded with media, which shows you the lowest common denominator of the human experience. You're bombarded with the Western viewpoint of happiness, which is consumerism, appeasing your acquisitive appetite, and materialism. You're bombarded with a tremendous amount of fear and doubt and worry that runs through the gamut of the human experience. And so if you're not thinking for yourself, then something is thinking for you, and it's this race belief that's swirling around us. So you have to establish, first of all, an intention. Intention is like a rudder on your ship, the direction you're going to be hitting in. Mm-hmm. It's not gross trying to make anything happen, but you have an intention to be happy. You have intention to live an excellent life. You have intention to be successful, success with the capital S, not with the small s success. An intention to be healthy, intention to be of service. Many people wake up every single day, don't have any intentions at all. They just want to see what's going to happen. I'm just going to go out here, I'm just going to go to job and do these tasks, but I have no intention at all. Now, if you don't have an intention, if you're suffering from an intention deficit disorder, then you're subject to emotional contagion. You're subject to the mental virus of separation. You're subject to whatever the world is popularly thinking at that moment to get on you and to think through you. And we don't want anybody just to begin running the running our mind. We want to run our own mind. You know, we don't want the world to run our mind. We don't want the 11 o'clock news to run our mind. We don't want the newspapers to run our mind. We don't want miseducation that happens in a lot of religious institutions to run our mind. We want to govern our own mind. So we have to establish an intention. Intention then helps protect the mind, so that which you're really interested in is let in. And that which you're not interested in, there's a vibrational force field that keeps it out. But if you're not interested in anything, if you now have an intention, then anything can get in. You experience it. You wonder why your life is just kind of aimlessly moving around. You have no rudder. Mm-hmm. You have no intention. You see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that intention is so powerful that, like your metaphor of the rudder, that we think that we need to have a whole bunch of, a friend and I were talking about this just the other day, but we need to have a whole bunch of ships, or we need to have an extra power motor on our boat to fix the problem. We think there's this huge this huge thing that has to happen for life to change, for this to move forward. But it's just that little degree of the rudder change of the intention, and then that little bit, and then you end up in an entirely different place from that changes the entire trajectory of your day in and of your life. And it's just our mind dismisses it, as you know, thinking it's too little, or how can this actually shift this problem in my life or this condition? But it has such a power to do that, as you know. That it's just such a power that carrying that intention and refocusing our minds and our life in that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You're on a ship, and if you move that wheel a fraction, you're going to be going, after a few miles, you're in a totally different direction, just with a mm-hmm. fraction of a turn of the wheel that changes the rudder, mm-hmm. just a fraction. Same mm-hmm. thing if a person's mm-hmm. flying a plane. And so if a person has no intention at all, they're just buffeted about by life experience. You establish a powerful intention for your life. That's not the end step. That's the beginning step. You establish an intention for your life. Now you're heading in a particular direction, and your personal law changes. And the universe can now begin to recognize you as this individual that has an intention for service, an intention for happiness, an intention for health and well-being. And the physical world even begins to change on your behalf, because your vibration is changed by the intention that you're establishing.
Well, I do want to respect your time, and I know it's been 30 minutes. I do have some more questions. But
go right ahead. Take another few quick minutes, please, to ask the questions.
Yay! So you talk about in Living from the Overflow, and in your lectures in Agape Live, that evolved people give to live until they live to give.
Yeah.
And to give to feel love as us, to let the presence move in as and through us. What I wanted to ask is distinction between giving to find your worth, like giving from sacrifice. How does someone know the difference of when someone hears that message of giving to live, or they're giving to appease, as you call it, the Santa Claus God, which I love. Someone's giving to find their worth versus giving to really live. How does somebody know the difference between those two?
Well, that particular phrase is basically teaching people that in the beginning of your spiritual practice, you actually give to establish yourself as a giver, that you start to set something in motion, that you have something to give. And then the universe matches that, and you end up having more to give. And what happens is, after a while, you begin to live to give. Instead of just giving to live, you're living to give. You wake up to be a giver. Now, there are individuals who give for ego strokes, and they give to appease an external deity, an external god, a Santa Claus god, or something like that. And those are just very beginning steps. There are people that still believe that there's a capricious god that can change his mind and have chosen people and things of that particular nature. You know, those are people who are still on the path growing into spiritual maturity, but you have to start somewhere. And so this is why, you know, we teach tithing, we teach supporting, we teach making sure that you're giving so that you can live, so you can prime the pump. When you begin to give, the message to the universe is, I have something to give. And if your message is, I have, then there's a sacred law that's written about in the Bible that says, they who have, more shall be given, and they who have not, even that which they have shall be taken away. Now, on the surface, that sounds cruel. But it's just a law. It's not cruel to say, well, you know, if you jump off a building, gravity's going to pull you down and you're going to go splat. That's not fair. You know, that's just a law. So if you're walking around thinking that you do not have and you don't want to give, then the law just says, okay, then what you have, you're going to lose. But if, in fact, you begin to give and you realize, oh, I have, then more comes in. And now, in the beginning, you've given to live, to have an expanded consciousness, and you end up living to give. You want to be a giver. You want to be generous. You want to be supportive. You want to be generous with your heart. You want to be generous with encouragement. You want to be generous with your smile, with compassion, with your hug. You want to be generous with your time. You want to be generous with your financial good, aiding communities and programs that will change the world. You see, so it goes from metaphysics is, I'm giving to live. Mysticism, I live to give. So it's basically helping you grow into the mystical awareness that, as the Sanskrit word for human, would mean dispenser of divine gifts. We are the dispensers of gifts. We're not here to get anything. We're here to let something that's already within us flow.
Mm-hmm.
Hope that's clear.
And so you have coming up now the Revelation Conference, and it's going to be live stream this year.
Oh my God, it's a it's one of a kind, powerful. The conference doesn't even describe it. It's an event, it's a conference, it's a gathering. It's an indoor festival. People fly in from around the world to be there in person, and it's also live streamed. People can go to agapelive.com, the website, and register. You can register for the whole conference, or you can do different days. We have Maladoma Somme speaking on Friday night. I'm speaking on a Thursday night on the 28th. I have Barbara DeAngelis coming in. I have Will Coleman coming in. I have Sheila McKeithen coming in. I have Paul Selig coming in doing some channeling. I have Hans King. I have Deborah Johnson. I have Carlton Pearson. I have great people. So it's like it's entitled Full Immersion, Celebration, Rejuvenation, and Regeneration. So we're inviting people to come on a Thursday night and fully immerse yourself into this consciousness of this powerful music, powerful dance, powerful artistry, powerful workshops, powerful presenters, meditation. Layla Ali is going to be there to speak about health and exercise and run us through some exercise program. I got yoga teachers. I've got Sara Salati coming in from the global cardio care community to talk about our heart and how to strengthen it. So I got the health, I've got the exercise, I got the living foods, I've got the meditation, the life visioning, I got the presenters. Everybody gathered from Thursday to Sunday. It's a place where people want to be. People are still signing up to come in. I got people coming in from Denmark. I got people coming in from Spain, Copenhagen, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Germany. Vonda Guzman, a great soloist, is flying from Germany to sing with us. And people all across the United States. So it's not too late for people to, you know what, set an intention and want the universe to support you in flying in here and being with us. Now, if you can't do that, then we have the live stream. You go to agapelive.com and you register. and stream in. And just as people stream into my Sunday and Wednesday services and feel like they're right there with us, right there in their living room, they're feeling the sacred energy of the community, they can do that as well. And I welcome both.
I attended it a couple of years ago, and it was absolutely everything that you said it is. It's an immersion. It's an experience. It's a festival. It's a community event. It's a transformation. It's a universe into itself. So yeah, everyone needs to go to that. It's absolutely amazing. My last question for you, and the last thing, is this being the title of the show, Calling All Leaders and Healers, and also the gatherings that I host of promoting healers, what is your definition, Dr. Beckwith, of a healer and a leader?
A leader is someone who follows. They follow the inner voice. They have the capacity for reverential alertness. That means they're attentive to being guided, not by the world, but attentive to being guided by the presence of God, presence of love, of beauty, intelligence that's within. And they have the tendency to create leaders. Leaders don't create followers. Leaders create leaders. So the leaders of our time, of this particular epic, this particular moment in history, we're to create more leadership, not followership. And reminding people that within them, it's such sacred, powerful energy, such intelligence, such unique expression of the presence. And so a real leader doesn't let a person know how great they are. A real leader, when they finish doing whatever they do in their particular gifted area, the people that are around them feel their own greatness. That's the power of a real leader. A person is left feeling their own innate greatness and beauty and self-love and appreciation. So that would be my quick definition of leadership.
Thank you for answering one more question. And thank you for bringing your vibration, your energy. Thank you for all the inner work that you've done. Thank you for all the fires that you've stepped through. And thank you for all the leaders and healers that you have created. I be one of them. And just thank you so much for all that you do and for coming on the show. It is such an honor to host you, such an honor to promote you, and I am so grateful to be on this planet knowing there's people like you on the planet.
It is absolutely my joy. It's been a sweet half hour, a little bit more than a half hour, but it seems like three minutes. We're walking on water here, and so I'll just remind people again, they can go to agapelive.com and live stream the services on Sundays and Wednesdays, and they can sign up for the Revelation 2016 Full Immersion, Celebration, Rejuvenation, and Regeneration. And they can also go to michaelbernardbeckwith.com to see when I'm going to be out speaking in different locations around the United States and around the world. And thank you for the great work you're doing.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you. Many blessings.
And many blessings to you. You're doing a great job.
Thank you. So you can go to Agape Live, that's A-G-A-P-E, live.com. Dr. Bernard Beckwith also has a meditation at 6:30 in the morning. It is archived, but it airs here at 9:30. It's phenomenal. His lectures are amazing. Some of the books that didn't get mentioned as we chatted that I would love for you to be aware of is he has a life visioning book, and it's also a CD that goes with that. It's really amazing. If you're really wanting to catch the vision that wants to happen in your life, he also has The Answer Is You. It's an easy read. It's a little book, but it's so powerful. It's potent. It's a medicinal book that each page has a energy that can help uplift you and help bring a more expanded thought to your life. He also has the Life Liftoff cards. These cards have his quotes and his poetic medicinal statements on each card, and you can pick one for each day. The other book, 40-Day Mind Fast Soul Feast, and that's a really great book to get if you want to do a 40-day practice. You read read one day and then put your focus, your intention on the prayer that he has for each day. Really amazing stuff. And then, of course, his book that we mentioned a few times, The Spiritual Liberation, Fulfilling Your Soul's Potential. That book, as I read earlier in the show, has the affirmations and then a declaration embodiment that I just love. I love it. Reading it before meditation, reading it before a run, letting that energy of it be carried and letting myself contemplate and digest it on a deeper level. And so, of course, also please look into his Revelation Conference. It is absolutely amazing. It is life-changing. And I'm just in gratitude and appreciation for being able to be a platform for his message and a holder of space for this incredible energy that he brings forward, and knowing that how many people are going to benefit from being introduced, or maybe if you already know about his work. And today I'd just like to finish with reading a embodiment and an affirmation from Spiritual Liberation to close out this amazing phenomena, this amazing experience. And the affirmation and embodiment that I'm going to read is also from Spiritual Liberation. And so just take this in, close your eyes as we finish together in this miracle that is now, in this miracle that is this moment, knowing that life is always happening for us, knowing that life is good, knowing that we are all, as Dr. Beckwith said, as a human, we are a distribution point of good. We're here to be a giver of that good. We're here to live, to give, to live, that we have that. We realize we have it within us. An affirmation, I haven't gotten to the book yet, but an affirmation that is very powerful that I use and I teach to my students as well is I have. And all needs met, that when we honor our needs as real, valid, and important, we go into that mystical place that all needs are met, that all our needs are met, because we already have it within, and when we realize we have it within it, we activate it in our external world. And then also the incredible words that he brought forward of that even in events that seem very tragic or seem bad, that those are opportunities to go deeper, opportunities to touch the real within ourselves, to move into that place of love and forgiveness, and that when we see them as opportunities, we see them as a chance to really deepen our practice, we really again see that life is always, always for us. And that when he was talking about being attacked, that attack is probably going to show up as really thinking about what somebody said about you, right? Or really caring about someone else's approval. And that it's going to show up, and that can shut us down. If we care that, when that comment comes in and we internalize it, that attack, that's an opportunity, of course, but that is where we have to make that agreement to break the agreement with mediocrity. I remember Marianne Williamson said that when a woman doesn't have approval, it's like cutting her off at the knees. And when a man is told that he's not man enough, that cuts him off at the knees. And so like Dr. Beckwith talked about, there's these archetypical energies that we all have, that when a woman's told she's not nice, she's told she's not kind, that will cut her off. But when a man is told he's not manly enough, that will cut him off. And I loved how he that in the collective consciousness, that there's a man will feel like he's going to be crucified, a woman will feel like she's going to be burnt. I've seen that as well, that every person that I've also helped to move into accepting their own mastery and the leader within, they've had that. We've all had that. Good to be aware of, right? And not realize that there's something wrong with you. And then I also loved how he said we'd stop trying to understand the crazy, that you can't understand a crazy mind. Another powerful, powerful teaching that he brought forward. And that we also need to carry that intention into our lives. So much medicine, so much good that Dr. Beckwith has to offer. So I'm going to read. I got on a little tangent there. I'm going to read his read an affirmation and some of his embodiment, and then talk about the show coming up. Actually, I want to finish with that. So let me just talk about the show. We will be having focus on community for the next show. We're going to have some community leaders that are here in Detroit. I'm very excited to host them. And Diane, who does community leadership in Royal Oak, and a few others that so the focus on community leaders is going to be the next show. And then in June, we're going to have Marianne Williamson, who has written Return to Love, New York Times bestseller, who is absolutely a living embodiment of love, and honored and privileged to host her and her message here on Calling All Leaders and Healers. And you can also join me at Accepted as I Am here in Plymouth every third Thursday for a workshop on self-love and self-acceptance, and also intuitive readings and guidance and inspirational message. And you can also go to barbarawhite.com and look at the happenings that are happening here at Accepted as I Am. All right, so finishing the show. This has got to end at some point, right? I'm just so excited. All right, the affirmation from Dr. Bernard Beckwith in Spiritual Liberation. It's on page 171. Today, I make room in my heart for myself. My self-respect is reflected in my thoughts and my actions. I respect the world in which all sentient beings and I live. I embrace my imperfect perfection and express a sense of humor even as I do my inner transformational work. Life is good, and I realize the preciousness of my human incarnation and that I am all right already. That reminds me of two things, the sense of humor that he talks about here. It's something I like to say. We're here to love the crazy. And then in Dr. Beckwith's CD, Transcendence, he has a great song that's a Let It Be All Right to Be All Right, the embodiment. From this space of connectivity, this space of fully participating in the nowness of the pure moment, I enter into the realm of ever-expanding good that some call heaven, the realm of infinite possibility, the realm of now. I am so connected to it that there is no battle between my inner life and my outer life. I now know, realize, accept, feel that I am heaven already. I shift in this moment knowing that regardless of how wonderful my life is, I'm barely scratching the surface of that which is within me. I am willing in this instant to set myself free. I speak this word from my perfect imperfection. I know that my life is a life of beauty and of love and of intelligence and of the abundance and of the order and harmony. I am convinced that my life is a life of God and that this life, this eternal, timeless life, is moving through me now. It now dissolves any coagulated thought forms that block, hinder, delay, or obstruct the divine, compelling right action from taking place in my life. I'm going to finish there, and I just want to remind you that you can go to agapelive.com, and you can also go to michaelbernardbeckwith.com for his speaking. I'm so excited he's going to be here in October. What a wonderful find out. I'm surprised I didn't know that. And you please check out his lectures. Please consider going to his Revelation Conference. They are incredibly, incredibly amazing. Much love for you. Know that all of life is working for you, that today to take even one or two of these messages and to chew on them, to contemplate them, to talk about them, let them be at the forefront of your thoughts, that there is such good that wants to happen through you, that you are precious, you are loved, and all parts of you are loved. All parts of you are beautiful. That God does not create shit, that God does not create something bad, and you are loved. You are so incredibly loved. There is so much love for you. And so please take these messages, these teachings from Dr. Beckwith, please look into these things, and you will have such a delicious treat. Much love for you, and I look forward to connecting. Take care.